we've been training children or kids for quite some time, whether it be on ILC properties and or if they're employed in the rural industry, from live export through onto station. So I've been doing it for nearly 10 years.
An ILC property, what's that?
Indigenous Land Corporation. Of course, they're heavily involved with the live export industry, and I've worked with the Indigenous Land Corporation up at Broome on one of their properties there, teaching young Aboriginal boys.
And why do you feel there was a need for it?
Oh, look, they were just part of the industry and they were providing a location. But at the end of the day, my main bread and butter comes from training people in industry, whether it be abattoirs, sale yards, or in the live export industry. And there's a great opportunity. We might as well start spreading the word in relation to animal welfare and handling practices a little bit earlier on.
And so that's important to get them young?
Yeah, look, I think it's about getting critical mass and getting the story out there. And for some of these kids, they might be going into the rural industry. And even if they're not, one of the things that we need to get across is a bit of consistency on what we need to be thinking about.
Mm. So talk me through some of the procedures that you've actually been teaching students over the last few days.
Sure. Look, part of it, other than animal welfare and livestock handling, is also about communication and how we can work as a team. So we start off at the beginning of the course in the classroom, getting to know each other and why we're there actually spending time. And so we talk about theory up until lunchtime and develop a bit of a relationship. I mean, a lot of these students, they come from two different schools, so we mixed it up and for them to get to know people. So we lay the ground rules for what we're going to do and why we're going to do it. And then we go out and do a simple exercise. Yesterday, what we did was we had five animals in a big sand arena and they had to move the cattle around an obstacle course and park them in the middle. And they wouldn't have done that if they didn't understand the principles of handling livestock and if they didn't work as a team. So it highlights, it's a simple exercise, but it highlights some of the principles in relation to what we're trying to get across here.
And are there new methods, I guess, to livestock handling that students are learning?
Look, you know, good stockmanship is good stockmanship. Some of them are definitely not new methods. What is probably new is more of a systems approach to why we're doing what we're doing. And having a system to, one, how do we communicate with the animals, but more importantly, let's have a system when things aren't going right, let's have a system on how we can try and address that so that we stay safe and that we maintain animal welfare. Whether I've worked around the world and worked with Irish people, Americans, etc., Canadians, New Zealanders, good stockmanship is good stockmanship. The difference that we've got today is that we've got science to understand or back up why people have been doing some of the things they've been doing for hundreds of years, and that's just the same in Australia.
So how do you ensure that the student or the handler stays safe in this kind of environment, and the same with the cattle?
Yeah, sure. Being safe is often about identifying the hazard and then looking at the risks and trying to minimise those. I mean, at the end of the day, we're handling live animals. One way to eliminate all risk is either don't handle them or make sure that there's a fence between you and them. Here at the school, at this training session, what we've done, any areas that are particularly high risk, I've made sure that I'm there doing it. What we do before we start these training courses is we get a group of cattle. We were provided, I think, 120 cattle, and I actually go through and assess the livestock, and any livestock that may present a bit of a risk, we remove those out, and we also train the other animals so that we get a more reliable outcome when the kids or students go to handle them. Of course, that doesn't happen in the real workforce, but in a training situation, we want to make sure that the animals are right, but more importantly, of course, that the children are safe. But on top of that is that they actually get a learning outcome and they can actually achieve what we're trying to set out to do.
But you would like to see these practices actually employed in the workforce?
Look, these practices are already being employed in the workforce. It's happening right now. I mean, I've done 10 training courses for the meat industry at abattoirs. I'm involved in feedlots. I've just come from a feedlot that's got 30,000 head on feed, and there are other people out there spreading the word and training. So, yeah, this is actually happening in the commercial world, you know. People are training their workforces, and the word that's happening now in a lot of our codes and standards is the word competent. People need to be deemed competent. So that's a little bit of a driving force also in industry, that we want to make sure that people are competent at what they're doing. And, you know, safety. I'm also doing work for New South Wales WorkCover. So you've really got WH&S, animal welfare. These practices make it more productive, and that all leads to profitability as well. So there's a lot of things at play at the moment that are driving this momentum that, you know, we're not just chasing cows or poking them around. There's actually a profession in how we do all of this.
Given the negative publicity on the industry in recent years, is education, I mean, how far do we need to go in terms of educating handlers in the industry?
Look, I think for me, the big thing, I mean, even if I put my primary producer hat on, is that we need consistency across our industries. So whether it be at the farm gate, whether that be in transport, whether that be at sale yards and stock and stage and agents, we need people to have a consistent approach on how we approach things. We've consistently see when things go wrong or we get a situation where people don't know how to handle it, that's where things usually go awry. So in actual fact, we want to teach people the skills to handle difficult situations. We all know that dealing with livestock, that it doesn't always go right, but what we need as an industry across all different sections and stakeholders, we need to know how we're going to deal with those difficult situations, whether it's trying to load the cattle at the farm gate, trying to get the animals off the truck at the sale yards, moving the animals around the sale yards. We need to know how we deal with those difficult situations.
Why are you so passionate about this field?
Animals have been a big part of my life, and there's different ways of doing things, and it can be just so much more enjoyable if we can, you know, understand what the animals' needs are, what their wants are, and we just change what we do to make that them achieve that. And there is just so much, there's such a great chance of exponential growth. You know, if the farmer handles the cattle, educated cattle are easy to get on and off trucks. If the truck drivers, you know, which they're out there, that know how to handle and position themselves to get the cattle off, it's just good animal production. You know, good animal welfare, good safe handling practices are just common sense, and they make things productive and they're profitable. At the end of the day, whether they're my cattle, the next door neighbours, or there's somebody's overseas, I just want to do the best thing by the animals that we're working with, whether it's the horses that I'm riding, the working dogs that are working for me, or the cattle. And I want people to be safe.
What do you think the most common mistake handlers and producers actually make when handling their cattle?
Often we're in a rush. That's one of the big things that you know, cattle don't, or livestock don't understand time, so rushing is a great cause of accidents, injury, and poor animal welfare outcomes. The other thing is that when we start to get in confined spaces, animals' behaviour changes. So the smaller the yards, animals become more unpredictable, and often we put too many animals in a yard, and that stresses them out, and it makes it also difficult to try and fix problems. So the other thing probably is people often apply too much pressure to animals, particularly when they have nowhere to go. So, you know, sometimes we just need to sit back when it's not going right, sit back, stop making noise, stop touching animals, and just see what the problem is.
And jump a bit. Tell me what the jumping's
about. The jumping is a form of moving. You know, these are all tools that we're trying to show the kids. Any tradesperson, you know, you've got sledgehammers, you've got little hammers, you've got big screwdrivers. It's understanding what your tools are and how you're going to use them. So what we're trying to do is show the kids different tools and different ideas. Just because you can jump doesn't mean you always need to jump, but it's about increasing our movement. So it's the way that we communicate with the animals. So it's a range of tools that we're trying to give the kids to show them that, you know, how we can move animals without making noise and without touching them.
And so is that, you know, a tip for producers out there as well? Maybe jump and put down the stick and the voice?
Yeah, look, we know categorically the noise that I'm talking about isn't steady bullocks, woo woo, that sort of stuff. The noise that I'm talking about is nonsensical screaming and banging of tools and that sort of stuff. We know that that causes stress. And the problem with noise like that is it's non-directional. So you might be thinking that you're moving those animals in that way, but it could be stopping the ones that you want to come. The noise, steady bullocks and woo-woo, yeah, look, that's what I call awareness sound. So it's about working out what you need to do. But if you're a yeller and a screamer, you know, the easiest way is just to turn the sound off and try and work out, is it your sound or is it your body position or movement that's moving them? We also know that, you know, touching an animal, and of course there's different extremes of that, let alone twisting a tail, we know that that causes them stress. You know, we're very fully aware of, you know, product quality. That should of course be one driver, but the other thing is, let's just do the right thing. So, not when knowledge runs out, violence begins, and, you know, when we start touching people, it's the lowest form of communication, so the same thing happens with animals. So, yeah, we just need to sometimes rethink it.